Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been a year since former 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick sat, then kneeled during the national anthem, in protest, he said, of police killings of black men. In the immediate wake, a public uproar, keep your personal crusade off the football field. Now, a new season, and he is sidelined, without a job, in a league desperate for good QBs. This hour on Point, should Colin Kaepernick play in the NFL? You can join us on air or online. Should Colin Kaepernick be kept in the NFL, be back in the NFL or not? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in the hour, we'll look at the posthumous discovery of severe CTE in the brain of former New England Patriots player Aaron Hernandez. We're going to go first, though, to the Colin Kaepernick controversy. Joining me in the studio is Sarah Jackson, professor of communication studies at Northeastern University, where she teaches social movement communication. She's the author of Black Celebrity, Racial Politics, and the Press, Framing Dissent. Sarah, always great to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me again.
Joining us from Arlington, Virginia, Cindy Boren, a sports reporter for The Washington Post. Her recent piece is headlined, Colin Kaepernick has done more than make a statement. He has shown the NFL players their power. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Welcome to you, Cindy.
Hi, Jane. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
And from Baltimore, Maryland, Alejandro Danwa, the editor-in-chief of the Shadow League sports website. He wrote a story on Tuesday headlined, Horrible NFL Ratings Are Chickens Coming Home to Roost. Blaming Colin Kaepernick and player protests during the national anthem is pure nonsense. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. And thanks to you, Alejandro. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me. Honored to be here with you guys.
Thank you. Cindy, we'll start with you. A new season in the NFL. Give us a headline for this conversation and a sense of the state of play in the NFL right now.
For me, I think that the takeaway so far has been that while ratings have been down, TV ratings have been down, I think there has been a sign, particularly with the Thursday night game, that perhaps they're beginning to rebound. I think for me the big takeaway so far has been the activism of players. You've seen certainly Colin Kaepernick, who is not a player, but his activism. You've seen the activism of J.J. Watt raising money for hurricane relief. He raised over $37 million. You saw Chris Long donating money to his hometown of Charlottesville for scholarships because he was so stunned by what he had seen during the violence there. And, you know, you're seeing also players are continuing to protest the anthem. Michael Bennett, for instance, in Seattle, Malcolm Jenkins in Philadelphia, and you're seeing white guys sort of standing with them now. Chris Long, for instance, always places a hand on Malcolm Jenkins' shoulder as he kneels or sits. And, you know, I think that's the takeaway. I know that four NFL players sent a letter to Roger Goodell urging him to name, say, November Activism Awareness Month. And, you know, I'm not sure that they would go in that direction, but you'll remember last year they dedicated a week for cleats for a cause when players could decorate their cleats with any cause that was close to them that they wanted to raise awareness for. So I think we're headed in that direction, you know.
Alejandro, so there's Cindy saying that the activism of players is a real headline today. Also a lot of talk lately about how quarterbacks are performing in the NFL. This, of course, gets us into Colin Kaepernick. But tell us the history here. Tell us what's going on.
Well, the quarterback play in the NFL now, when you look at the fact that Colin Kaepernick is unemployed, is really laughable at this point. I mean, statistically, if you look at over the past 20 or 30 years, there is no one with his resume that has not earned an opportunity to be in an NFL training camp the next season, whether they're coming off a free agency year as he is now or whatever that may be. But people are really starting to see the hypocrisy of the NFL when you see such quarterbacks being signed that do not have his skill set, that have not led teams to Super Bowls, that have not had the backing of their previous coaches, despite the false narrative that he would be a distraction. All of his former NFL coaches said that he was a consummate leader within the locker room, So, you know, people are really starting to understand that there may not be a concrete mechanism of blackballing, but there is something going on within the conservative ownership base of the NFL that's keeping Colin Kaepernick unemployed. Mm-hmm. And just to look at the quality of the NFL product on the field, who's being signed, it's really baffling to think that this guy has not deserved another opportunity. And when you have two of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the NFL in Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers both come out and say he's good enough to play in the NFL, he deserves to be on an NFL roster, and they're hopeful and that they're rooting for him, I think that speaks volumes to the fact that he's still unemployed.
On CBS Sunday Morning this week, Nora O'Donnell asked New England Patriot quarterback Tom Brady if CK, Colin Kaepernick, could play again in the NFL.
I sure hope so. You know, I've always watched him and admired him, the way that he's played. He, you know, was a great young quarterback. He came to our stadium and beat us and took his team to the Super Bowl in 2012. You know, he accomplished a lot in the pros as a player, and he's certainly qualified, and I hope he gets a shot.
And here's Green Bay quarterback Aaron Rodgers telling ESPN that it would be, quote, ignorant to think that Kaepernick's remaining unsigned had nothing to do with his activism. Quote, I think he should be on a roster right now, he said. On Fox Sports on August 31st, commentator Shannon Sharp explains why Rodgers' support is such a big deal.
This is huge. This is huge because it destroys the narrative that Colin Kaepernick can't play and that his protest plays no bearing on why he's not on current roster. Hmm. So kudos to Aaron Rodgers, because he could have said nothing. Instead, he put his name behind it and said, I think Colin Kaepernick is good enough to be on the roster.
And here's a video from last week from the Players Tribune, Seattle Seahawks cornerback Richard Sherman talking about how ridiculous it is that Kaepernick is unemployed when the quarterback play across the league in week one was so atrocious.
Does he deserve a job? And of course he deserves a job. You saw the quarterback play throughout the league, and it was terrible. You know, what happened to Indianapolis, you know, I mean, you saying they couldn't use Kaepernick, that's, you know, that's crazy talk. But, you know, it's unfortunate that a man is unemployed right now who's a pretty good ball player, won his fair share of ball games. And there are lesser talented guys employed because they didn't stand up for a cause.
Cindy Bourne, straight up, is Colin Kaepernick being blackballed by the NFL, by NFL owners?
It certainly seems like something is going on. I can't imagine that owners actually get together and talk about this, because sometimes I think running the league is like herding cats, and I'm not really sure that they're that well organized. But, you know, when you have John Mara, the owner of the Giants, saying that he had gotten more letters about possibly signing Kaepernick as a backup than anything else, you had the Baltimore Ravens when Joe Flacco was hurt during preseason, and they were in need of a backup, and they were considering Kaepernick, and Steve Bisciotti, the owner, backed off. You know, and Kaepernick even had the endorsement of his former coach in the NFL, Jim Harbaugh, who's now at Michigan, who has said favorable things about him. His brother coaches the Ravens. Both of them have said they've been in touch with Kaepernick, and yet they chose to go in a different direction and sign a couple of guys to fill in during preseason that you haven't really heard of. Mm. So, you know, clearly something is going on. You know, I'm not really sure what. I think it's easier for them to just ignore it rather than take whatever, you know, whatever attention they would get for it. And, you know, it also seems to me that if it were going to happen, the ideal time would have been in preseason. From the owner's perspective, you know, give the guy a chance, say, look, we brought him in, and, you know, people aren't paying as much attention during preseason. You will recall when Michael Sam came into the NFL, he was cut by the time the season started. I think he was on a practice squad. But, you know, deal with it during the preseason, get it out of the way, and it becomes a lesser story farther down the
Sarah
line.
Sarah Jackson, what do you see in this story?
Well, you know, I think from sort of the big picture sociological standpoint, there's a lot going on here about the limitations of protests that are available to celebrities, in particular black celebrities, in particular black athletes that are playing in a league which, you know, I think the NFL in and of itself tends to be a little bit more conservative than some other professional sports leagues like the NBA, for example. And so we're seeing this conversation evolve. We saw, as Alejandro point out, it started being justified, sort of the potential blackballing of Kaepernick was being justified by this idea that he wasn't really that good. And it's very, very clear at this point that that was a narrative that was used to obscure what was really going on, because as Alejandro pointed out, he is good enough to play. And as Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and a whole lot of other people, even people who disagree with his protest, have said, he's good enough to play in the NFL. So we can no longer sort of accept that narrative, but it is significant that for most of the last year, that was the narrative that the coaches and other sort of people defending not drafting him were attached to. Now, of course, we see this more complex conversation happening, and I think partially because more and more players have engaged in this activism, more and more players, both black and white, have spoken out against the issues that Colin Kaepernick was trying to bring attention to with his protest, which I think in some sense we've stopped talking
about.
Yeah. But also just the fact that it's a sort of freedom of speech issue. So even the players like Malcolm Long, who won't himself protest, supports his teammates in their right to protest.
Alejandro, you wrote this week that it's both laughable and absurd that Colin Kaepernick remains unemployed. To suggest that Kaepernick gets worse than every other starter and backup suiting up right now is the dictionary definition of fake news. To your mind, what is at the heart of this?
Well, I think there are a number of things at the heart of this, but I think the most important thing is we have to look at the conservative nature of NFL ownership. And I think if you were to poll them almost to a man, unfortunately, they have this idea that he somehow desecrated the American flag and was disrespectful to the American military. And he came out early on and said, well, you know, maybe sitting is not the best thing to do, but I'm going to take a knee to pay respect to the people in the military. He had family that was in the military. And he said, I'm not disrespecting the military. I'm not disrespecting the flag. But I can no longer sit silently while we have innocent people dying in the street. We have these social inequities.
We'll play that sound after the break, Alejandro. I got to go to it right now. We're discussing Colin Kaepernick still on the sidelines after taking a knee during the national anthem. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. More after this break. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the fallout from Colin Kaepernick's kneeling during the national anthem, and you can join the conversation. What's a pro athlete's responsibility today? To convention, to the flag, to principle? My guest this hour, Sarah Jackson, professor of communication studies at Northeastern University, where she teaches social movement communication, Cindy Boren, a sports reporter for The Washington Post, and Alejandro Danois, editor-in-chief of the sports website The Shadow League. I want to play some sound here. Here he is, former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick, explaining in August 2016 why he would continue to sit during the singing of the Star-Spangled Banner.
I'll continue to sit. I'm going to continue to stand with the people that are being oppressed. To me, this is something that has to change. And when there's significant change, and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent, and this country is representing people the way that it's supposed to, I'll stand.
He then clarified that he did not mean that he lacked respect for the flag or the military.
People are dying in vain because this country isn't holding their end of the bargain up as far as, you know, giving freedom and justice and liberty to everybody.
And this is an interview with ESPN just last week. Adrian Peterson, who was suspended from the NFL in 2014 after pleading guilty to reckless assault for beating his 4-year-old son with a switch, but then was reinstated, discussed why Colin Kaepernick does not have a job right now.
Him taking the knee and, you know, standing up for, you know, for his cause, that would be the only reason that he doesn't have a job.
So do you feel he's being blackballed?
Yeah, without a doubt.
A lot of listener response. Nancy from Twitter says, the NFL betrays the worst of American values. It's okay to beat your wife, okay to submit players to life, personality-ending head trauma, but not okay to have principles on behalf of their rights and those suffering. Sam says, keep in mind that Kaepernick was a third stringer when he began protesting. Rick says the anti-Kaepernick movement is based on the assumption that football players and fans must align with only a certain kind of politics. Got a board full of callers. Let's go to Caesar in Florence, South Carolina. Hi, Caesar. Glad you're on. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, how are you all? I'm probably one of the biggest fans of professional football. I'm a rabid Washington Redskins fan. Last year, I even bought a Washington Redskins golf cart. And in July, I made up my mind, based upon what was happening with Colin Kaepernick, that I would not watch nor post in social media in any way anything to do with the NFL. Now, I bought season tickets that are travel packages that I'm just going to go on those trips, but I doubt I'll go to the games. I find it offensive that the NFL would blackball someone like Colin Kaepernick. He's an outstanding individual. In short, he's just a good man. He's never been arrested. He's intelligent. His play on the field is better than people like Blake Bortles, and there are a few other quarterbacks I could name now that are starting. And for the NFL to slander and just blackball someone like Colin Kaepernick just deeply offends me on all levels. If he's not good enough to play in the NFL based upon his skill and his character, then who is?
Caesar, thank you. Sarah Jackson.
Yeah, you know, I think a couple important points were brought up. One, this idea of patriotism, and I think even someone earlier said protesting the anthem, really, I would argue, was also used as sort of a rhetorical cover for what was going on here. Because Kaepernick was very clear. He wasn't protesting the anthem. He wasn't unpatriotic. He wasn't against the military. He was protesting police brutality and other forms of sort of racialized violence in America, right? And largely, the conversation about the anthem and patriotism subsumed the conversation about that anti-black violence, which was really what Kaepernick was trying to talk about. And so one of the things that you saw his critics saying was, well, I'll believe he's genuine when he puts his money where his mouth is. Well, he has been, right? He committed $1 million or probably, mm-hmm. I think more than that, something dollars to these causes. He's been showing up in local communities, teaching young people about the Bill of Rights. And he's been, you know, doing all sorts of just generous without acknowledgement, you know, things. And so you do see he's essentially a model citizen. He's engaging in his right to protest, and he's teaching others why that right is important. And yet, as the last caller pointed out, we have NFL players who beat their wives into unconsciousness and beat their children and abuse animals, and they still have jobs.
So Sarah brings up a great point, Alejandra. The justification for Kaepernick not being signed by the NFL right now and by owners, by coaches, is that he's too controversial. We've seen controversial figures in the NFL. How is this different?
You know, this is just different in the absurdity of the madness of this incredibly deceptive dialogue that people are trying to portray. We're 50 years removed from Muhammad Ali saying his famous line that no Viet Cong ever called him the N-word. He was vilified, and fortunately, through the hourglass of time, he has been deified and really honored and respected for the stance he took for being a man of human and civil rights all around the globe. And what Colin Kaepernick has done to see the backlash, especially, you know, when we look at people think that the NFL has a Colin Kaepernick problem. America is starting to realize that we have an NFL problem. We've talked about the violence. We've talked about the CTE. We have not yet touched on the fact that the NFL created generations of drug addicts by pouring painkillers and narcotics down people's throats so that the turnstiles could keep churning. And now when we look at the fact that the medical benefits that the veterans have, how they try to disassociate themselves and totally go against the CTE research that came mm-hmm. out recently, mm-hmm. you know, it's just a horror. It's horrible.
Let me get Brendan in here from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Brendan. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hey, Jane.
Hi.
Yeah, I go so back and forth on this topic, and, you know, I would love to sit here and bash rich, old, white men, even though I aspire to be one, you know, these owners who, you know, own all these teams. But, you know, these guys do employ murderers, I mean, essentially, womanizers, men who drive down the highway at 110 miles per hour with a car full of guns and children in the car. The difference with those players is, unfortunately, they were really good. Kaepernick is good enough. I watch a lot of football. He is good enough to be an NFL quarterback, but with all the media circus that would surround him, I don't think he's good enough to also bring that circus with him and have the owners put up with it. It's kind of the same as Tim Tebow was a pretty good NFL quarterback, but there was such a media circus around him. When other teams were looking at him, they decided, you know, we're not going to employ him because there's too much attention, you know, that comes along with
it. Too much of a circus that comes with it. Brendan, thank you, Sarah.
But let's keep in mind, right, that this media circus, this controversy is constructed, right? I mean, there should and rightfully could be a media circus around players who abuse their spouses or abuse their children. Those players should be being sort of dragged through public scrutiny constantly, right? And yet they aren't. And I think that really says something about the values that not just the owners, but maybe Americans in general are willing to accept, right? The idea that you're okay with somebody does something bad, they make retribution, they're back in the league, but somebody does something that sort of challenges us, our ideas of patriotism, or asks us to think critically about race, and suddenly that's what the media fixates on. And I think that that could be different if people made different choices.
Here's Jeff in Hartford, Connecticut. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm looking at this whole controversy from the point of the owner down to the general manager down to the coach. Kaepernick is an employee, and basically he has to do what the employer says and follow the rules and try to achieve the goals of the employer, owner, or general manager. You know, he can't decide to use their venue on their field in their game to do his goal. It's a lofty goal. I mean, I admire him for that. It's not about how good he is, and it's not about a general blackballing by all the coaches in the league. That's just hearsay and speculation. I mean, that coach or whoever would hire Kaepernick likes his skills, but they don't want that extra attention. That's a tangent to the...
Jeff, thank you. Cindy Boren, you hear Jeff? Stick to the game. Stick to what you're supposed to do out there.
Yeah, you know, and one thing that I think that is also overlooked is that coaches hate a distraction more than anything. NFL coaches love to run their practices, their week-long schedule leading up to the game with precision. The last thing they want to think about is, you know, life outside of football. And, you know, I think that anything that is perceived as taking away from that is going to be something. It was a factor with Tim Tebow, as one of the callers mentioned. You know, it's not worth, for them, their perspective is it's not worth the distraction when you have only 16 games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we disagree with that, of course. It is worth the distraction. You know, I mean, it is important. Almost 3 years ago, after the Ferguson incident, Rams players came out and protested. You know, I mean, it is important, and the NBA is so good about encouraging its players to take a stand, but they have, you know, 1,000,001 games, and every team makes the playoffs, it almost seems like, that, you know, they can be a little bit different. And, you know, even Aaron Rodgers said that, you know, the NBA is so different from the NFL. And I think that's part of the problem, too, is, you know, it's such a contracted season. It's really not very long, and each game means so much. They just don't want to deal with it.
A lot on the line.
Nobody pushes them.
Here's Chip Kelly. I want to get him in here. He was the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers at the time that all this happened. He told CBS News that it was up to Colin Kaepernick if he wanted to stand during the national anthem or not.
We recognize the right of any individual to choose to participate or not participate in the national anthem, and so doesn't the league. So, you know, the league statement is they encourage them, but it's not required to stand during the playing of the national anthem. So, you know, it's his right as a citizen.
And here's ESPN commentator Stephen Smith on ABC's Good Morning America talking about his response to Colin Kaepernick, his refusal to stand during the anthem. Here's that.
He wanted to make a point. And as Mark Cuban pointed out, he didn't plant a bomb. He didn't shoot anybody. He didn't do anything. He made a silent protest. He's an unabashed supporter of Black Lives Matter. He addressed the issue of police brutality as an incentive as to why he was taking the position that he took. We understand it. And, a lot of people within the Black community, I can tell you for a fact, absolutely agree with him.
Sarah Jackson, I hear Chip Kelly there, the former coach of Colin Kaepernick, saying, well, we recognize his right to do what he wants. He's a citizen, but he's not playing. I mean, they can say one thing, right, and do another?
Yeah, I mean, look, we really need to put this narrative to rest that sports players are required to follow convention in order to keep their jobs. This has been put to rest. In 1996, an NBA player, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, would pray as a form of protest during the national anthem. This was following the Rodney King beating and sort of other racial uprisings that resulted from it. And, you know, he was initially told that he could no longer play. The ACLU filed a lawsuit, and immediately the NBA rescinded that ruling. And in fact, everyone agreed that this is a fundamental First Amendment right, that players can decide whether they do or do not want to observe the anthem. So this idea that just because something is convention, that something that most people do should be held as the end-all be-all of whether or not someone has the right to play, really, we need to put that to rest, I think, in these conversations.
We are talking about the NFL and Colin Kaepernick this hour. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. Sarah, you brought up Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. Here is some sound from that. The NBA Denver Nuggets player refused to stand for the Star-Spangled Banner before games in the 1990s, arguing that the flag was a symbol of oppression and in conflict with his Muslim beliefs. He was suspended in March of 96 for one game and then came to a compromise with the league, as you mentioned, which allowed him to close his eyes during the national anthem instead. Here he is speaking in Michigan back in 2013.
It's like, it's okay to be a Muslim and play basketball, but it's not okay to be a conscientious Muslim to voice your concern about a socio-political or economic situation, because they don't want this type of behavior to catch on. So they have to make an example of it. They ended up trading me that year.
So there's Abdul-Rauf. Cindy Boren, you wrote in the Washington Post that Colin Kaepernick has shown NFL players their power, and yet he is unemployed. What did you mean by that?
I think that players are beginning to realize that they can have a voice, even in a league where their contracts aren't guaranteed. Kaepernick is paying a really steep price for enlightening them to that. But, I think you're seeing players realizing that. You know, you're seeing that in protests that aren't going away. Mm-hmm. You're seeing that in guys like Brady and Rodgers, who are, arguably two of the leaders in the NFL who are speaking up in favor of Kaepernick. I think that the guaranteed contract is a big, big part of it and why so many players probably are silent on the issue.
Mm.
But, I do think it's changing slowly.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're beginning to realize we can speak up. Especially if you can play. Aaron Rodgers isn't going to get cut. And if you can play, you can have a voice.
Let me get Jim in here from Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Jim. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I think the NFL is being very inconsistent in that they'll continue to employ athletes who have committed actual crimes of domestic violence, but they won't employ Colin Kaepernick, who's committed no crimes.
Mm. It's a good point, Jim. Thanks. Alejandro, would you agree?
Oh, I definitely agree. And I wanted to just go back a little bit to people bringing Tim Tebow into this conversation, because that's a total erroneous way to go about this. Tim Tebow, as great of a person and an athlete and a leader as he was in the locker room, was one of the most horrible NFL quarterbacks in the history of the league. He makes Jim Druckenmiller look like Joe Montana. So Colin Kaepernick, there's no doubt that there are 28 starting NFL jobs at the quarterback position. You cannot tell me that there are 28 better quarterbacks in the NFL. When we go to the backups, that's 56 positions in the NFL. It's even ludicrous to lump these two in that same conversation. And I just think the NFL is missing a great opportunity to be on top, on the cutting edge of this conversation that we need to have about as a society and what we stand for. And I think it really links into this emerging return of some very nasty attitudes that are at the mm-hmm. core of America based upon the current political climate mm-hmm. and what people feel free to express now that we're having an honest conversation about people of color and their treatment and the disparities in the United States.
10 seconds before the break, Sarah Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what Alejandro just said. I think, you know, this is something where, again, this all started because of issues of racial inequality and issues of police brutality. And all this conversation, all this framing that has really talked about patriotism or lack thereof, skill lack thereof, has really obscured that conversation. And that's the conversation that Colin Kaepernick wants us to be having.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. In a moment, we'll turn to the finding that Aaron Hernandez, the former New England patriot and convicted murderer who committed suicide in April, had severe CTE. His fiance is suing. We're finishing up this conversation now about Colin Kaepernick, his unemployment after kneeling during the national anthem. And you can join us. Do you think that Colin Kaepernick has opened the door for future protests, given power to players? You can follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. In an interview on August 2nd on Fox Sports, Ray Lewis, who pled guilty to obstruction of justice in connection with the stabbing deaths of two men in 2000 and then went on to win Defensive Player of the Year the following season, explained why he posted a video to Colin Kaepernick telling him to tone down his social activism the day before.
So my message yesterday was simple to him. Get back on the field. Do whatever you got to do to get back on the field and let your God-given ability speak for you.
And this July, recently retired quarterback Michael Vick, who spent 21 months in federal prison after pleading guilty for his involvement in a dog fighting ring, but was subsequently signed by the Philadelphia Eagles after he left prison, told FS1 that if Kaepernick wanted a team to sign him, he should not have an afro.
Hey, the first thing we got to get Colin to do is cut his hair. You know, I mean, listen, I'm not up here to try to be politically correct, but, you know, even if he puts cornrows in it, I don't think he should represent himself, you know, in that way in terms of, you know, just the hairstyle. Just go clean cut. You know, why not? You know, you're already dealing with a lot of controversy surrounding this issue.
So I'm speaking this hour with Sarah Jackson, Northeastern University, Cindy Boren, Washington Post, and Alejandro Danwa from the Shadow League. You know, I hear those two soundbites, Sarah Jackson, Ray Lewis, and Michael Vick, and I think, well, those are two African-American men speaking about their colleague. I mean, what do you hear in that, in those voices?
I mean, regardless of their other identities, I think if anyone takes life advice from Ray Lewis or Michael Vick, then, you know, I think that's a little bit questionable.
But as an African-American woman, mm-hmm. what do you hear in that?
You know, I think that there's one, I think there's obviously always going to be disagreement within the community about the proper way to dissent or protest around particular issues or whether even to protest around particular issues. That goes back as far back as dissent goes, right? I also do think there's a generational difference where some older players like Ray Lewis, for example, feel that people should just keep their head down and be quiet and that that's the way to succeed. But I do obviously think the hypocrisy there of folks particularly who have served time and been found, you know, guilty of criminal, really violent criminal acts,
right,
saying that Colin Kaepernick shouldn't have an afro is just really basic sort of respectability politics about blackness and their discomfort with the visibility of that. And I think that we live in a moment, it's 2017, people need to get over that, you know?
Let's go to Robert in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Sarah earlier referenced the critic accusing Kaepernick of refusing to put his money where his mouth is. That critic was our very own former sheriff, Milwaukee County Sheriff Clark, hugely controversial in his own right and less of a role model, in my opinion, than Colin Kaepernick. My quick take, the owners are less worried about distraction on the field than they are distraction among the fan base. This is about the bottom line. Mm.
Robert, thank you. Teresa in New Orleans, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
It seems like everybody's just forgetting the basic issue here. You know, Kaepernick has the right, as does a movie star, a musician, a recording artist, anybody, to say what they want to say, to speak their mind. But I, as a consumer, as a football consumer, player, you know, mm-hmm. buy tickets and stuff.
As a fan,
have
yeah.
the right to say, if you say something that is offensive to me, then I'm not going to pay your meal ticket anymore. I mean, you can't say something. Unfortunately, the American flag is, and I say fortunately, is honored by the majority of people in the United States. We still live in the best country in the world. So that he picked on something, and I know y'all say, "Oh, it wasn't that," but that was.
It was a hot button issue. Yep. It was sacred to many people, Teresa. I hear it. Alejandro, I mean, both those calls speak really at the heart of sort of the bottom line for the owners and to some extent, Teresa was saying the fans, right? Alejandro?
Yeah, I just think people aren't willing to do a deep intellectual dive when they say things like he picked on the flag. We've already done that. We've dissected it. There's no need to go back into what his point is. You know, I just think the larger issue is that in 2017, you know, Colin Kaepernick is not opening the door. He is part of a movement that started back long ago, unfortunately too long ago, with the likes of Paul Robeson and others that followed in his footsteps. We have learned throughout history that free speech is not free if you're a black athlete, because there's going to be a major backlash. If people want to see the capabilities of what can happen, don't look at Colin Kaepernick. Look at the University of Missouri football players and what they did by all coming together and say, we are not going to play another football game and earn millions of dollars for this university if these racist incidents on campus, if this university president and other administrators who have acquiesced to the wills of other people that are counterintuitive to basic humanity. You know, Colin Kaepernick is a piece in this puzzle, and 20 years from now, he's going to be an excellent case study in how this movement has progressed forward. But he is part of a vacuum and a movement that started long ago, and yeah. it's a very important piece, but people need to look at it in the aggregate.
Cindy Bourne, I've got only about a minute and a half here. Kaepernick's jersey is still one of the best-selling in the league, popular with fans who want to wear it. Some want to burn it, to be honest. What has Colin Kaepernick come to symbolize beyond football?
Activism, I think. I think the willingness to stand up for what you believe in, the willingness to sacrifice an NFL career. You know, I think he's very brave, and I think a lot of people see him as being very brave. You know, regardless of whether you agree with what he's doing or you think he's making a huge mistake or, you know, that he's choosing the wrong venue for airing his protest, you know, he's doing something courageous. He's sacrificing something.
Can you imagine a scenario where he is signed, a team signs him, all forgiven?
Honestly, sure. NFL injuries happen all the time. Quarterbacks are at a premium. You know, even though some of these guys, as Alejandro was saying, you know, some of these no-name guys that are getting signed just mm-hmm. boggle your mind. But, you know, I could see that. You know, the Seattle Seahawks were interested in him over the summer.
Yep.
I would have thought Seattle would have been a great place for him, actually. And
Sarah,
kind of surprised.
Sarah Jackson, I'll give you the last word here.
Yeah, I mean, I think beyond what Kaepernick symbolizes in football, look, I think we can all acknowledge we're in a crucial and sort of perilous moment in our country about the arc of justice and about being on the right side of history. And this is both around issues of racial injustice, but issues around freedom of speech and many other issues. And I think Alejandro's right that when we look back, and it's funny he called Kaepernick a case study, my whole book is about this, this will be one of many cases where we look back in history and say, he was on the right side of history, just like Ali, just like Robeson, just like Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, just like many other black celebrities who have protested injustices throughout history.
It's a fascinating conversation, and I really appreciate all of you coming in to talk about it. Sarah Jackson, professor of communications at Northeastern, thanks so much for being here, Sarah.
Thank you.
Cindy Boren, sports reporter for The Washington Post. Cindy, great insights. Thanks.
Thank you.
And Alejandro Danois, editor-in-chief of the Shadow League sports website. Thanks to you, Alejandro.
Much appreciated. Thanks so much.
Thank you. In a moment, the stunning twist in the Aaron Hernandez saga. We'll get to that. This is On Point. A posthumous brain examination of former New England Patriots tight end 27-year-old Aaron Hernandez revealed a severe form of the degenerative brain disease CTE. In April, Hernandez committed suicide in prison where he was serving a life sentence for murder. His family has donated his brain to Boston University's CTE Center. They are now suing the New England Patriots and the NFL. Joining me from New York City to talk about this is Ken Belson, who covers the NFL for the New York Times. Ken, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
So tell us what was discovered in the brain of Aaron Hernandez.
The doctors and researchers at Boston University took samples of his brain and found a very severe form of chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is a degenerative brain disease that's been linked to repeated head hits, both in football players and other athletes and also soldiers. What was particularly stunning is that the severity of it in somebody who was only 27 years old, the level of destruction in his brain, the doctors and researchers said, was more consistent with somebody who had a median age of 67, so somebody almost 40 years older. That was probably the most stunning finding, was the level of severity of the brain disease in Hernandez. From there, it's hard to go much further since we don't know the cause of any of it is still very much up in the air, and we certainly can't make judgments about whether his behavior, in the involvement in the murder of his former friend, and even off the field in bar fights and other things he did, was at all directly related to the CTE, but there's a lot of inference, and I think that's what is warranting more study, I think.
Well, talk about that a little bit. What are the symptoms of chronic traumatic encephalopathy?
So far, according to the doctors at BU, they've come up with a sort of a four-stage model, four being the most severe versions of the disease and one being the least severe. And it's everything from memory loss to full-blown dementia, impulse control, a lack of ability to organize your life, what they call executive function, cognitive problems, problem-solving. So it's a range of things. Aggression is another defining characteristic or one of the symptoms. How much of all of those things you have kind of depends, on the severity of the disease, and obviously other things too. I mean, some people who have been found with CTE also had Parkinson's or ALS or other things, so that may contribute to it as well. There's a very little understood connection to, say, the use of steroids and other things you might have done during your life. So it's very hard to draw a straight line there. But the behavior exhibited by the people who've been found to have CTE, these are many of the symptoms that they found in them, is memory loss and impulse control and so on.
The family of Aaron Hernandez donated his brain to the Boston University CTE Center. They are taking legal action now. Tell us about that.
Yes, his lawyer, Aaron Hernandez's lawyer in the most recent trial, sued both the Patriots and the NFL on behalf of Aaron Hernandez's daughter with the for what they call parental consortium, basically the loss of income of his parent. And it alleges that the NFL and the Patriots knew about the dangers of repeated head hits and didn't prevent or at least properly inform Aaron of that risk. Frankly, a lot of lawsuits have alleged this, and most of them don't go anywhere because players who there are many different reasons, one of which is the league typically argues that what you did during your playing days is not governed by the courts. It's governed by the labor agreement that the players are part of, and therefore it goes to an arbitrator, not a court. And the judges have many courts have agreed with that logic. The other is, how do you determine whether a concussion he got as a Patriot led to his behavior versus a concussion he might have received in high school or college or some other setting? Mm-hmm. And so that causation issue is really critical. It's very hard to prove, right? Because most concussions
You know, how do you know any one concussion led to something, especially if you've had many of them? And how do you know whether there's a direct line from some bar fight, say, and a concussion he got, say, a week before or a year before? And most concussions actually aren't even documented with any specificity.
And yet, the NFL's $1 billion settlement happened just a few years ago with former players and their families around this issue. Remind us about that.
Yes. So that settlement, which, you know, I guess it's fair to say it was a landmark settlement because the league agreed to pay players with severe neurological problems a lot of money over many years, retired players only. But it basically did so that there was no discovery, and it stopped basically the pursuit of the league's culpability, and they essentially sort of reached a settlement to try and make the problem go away. They also protected themselves in the future from future lawsuits, which is to say all retired players or players retired by April of 2014 can no longer sue the NFL on this issue. And that's going to make that's an interesting case because it's unclear whether Aaron Hernandez was actually retired in 2014, even though he was on trial. So he may still have been, quote unquote, an active player and therefore, you know, would be out of this settlement. If he had retired by that point, he may be eligible for benefits, or his family would be anyway.
What was most interesting, Ken, just in a minute we have left here, what was most interesting to me was back to the Boston University CTE study, their center, 110 of the 111 brains of former NFL players donated to that center had CTE.
Yes, the main flaw in that study is that it's been a roughly self-selecting group of families that have donated the brains, and so they kind of knew their dads and husbands had emotional and cognitive issues, and therefore they donated the brains on the suspicion that they might have had CTE. Having said all that, if you run the numbers, it's a remarkable percentage of players now who have died during that period have been found to have CTE, so the order of 9%. So it may be, in fact, much higher, the number of players that have CTE but just don't donate their brains.
Well, Ken Belson, NFL reporter for The New York Times, we really appreciate your time and coming in to tell us about these new findings. Thanks very much, Ken.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, coming up Monday, Tom Ashbrook is in Spokane, Washington for On Point's National Listening Tour, talking with locals there about this tough wildfire season and our changing climate. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom. He'll be back on Monday. This is On Point. Have a good weekend.